Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from radio's golden era. I'm your host, Mark Levonier, and this hour, science fiction. Later on, we hear the story Outer Limit on Escape, but right now, a tale from Poul Anderson on Exploring Tomorrow. Hosted by one of sci-fi's preeminent editors, John Campbell Jr., this episode first heard on the Mutual Broadcasting System on April 16th, 1958.
Exploring Tomorrow.
And now, here is your guide to these adventures of the mind, John Campbell.
The term genius is fairly common in our language today. I wonder how many of you realize that the term originated with the old Arabian Nights concept of the genie. You know, the magical creature that came in a bottle and had such wonderful powers. The story is about a whole planet of geniuses. Genie. Interesting people to try to enslave, you know. Laboratory scientists have as much fun as anybody else, you know. One of the laboratory laws, sometimes called Finagle's Law or Murphy's Law, goes, in any laboratory experiment, if something can go wrong, it will. Well, this is the story of a planet-sized laboratory experiment in which something could go wrong.
Professor Haim to His Excellency Marshal Gorham. The ship is now in orbit about the planet of destination.
Good. Good. Have a lifeboat prepared for descent with an invisibility screen.
Yes, Your Excellency. How many crewmen will you want to take along?
None. There'll be just myself and you, Professor Haim.
Sir, you, the Marshal, landing on a barbarian world without even an escort? I'm begging your pardon, sir, but...
Do you mean that the Grand Marshal of the Galactic Imperial Armed Forces can't carry out an undercover inspection on a backward planet without a dozen Marines clanking in his wake?
No, sir. No, sir.
And please remember that the people down there have no weapon more powerful than a bow and arrow, whereas I will be carrying a nuclear blaster under my coat.
Yes, sir. Of course, Your Excellency.
And while we are down there on that planet, Professor Haim, stand by for possible action. We may have to bombard the place with cobalt missiles. Wipe all the life off it.
Sterilize the entire planet, sir?
You heard me, Professor. I said we may have to. Not that we will. It depends on what I find down there. That peaceful, primitive world may turn out to be just another stupid scientific experiment. Or it may turn out to be the worst danger the Empire and all its stars have faced for 1,000 years. Now, I want you, Professor. I'm in my office at once. Over.
Yes, Your Excellency. Over and out.
Oh, there you are, Professor Haim.
Yes, Marshal Gorham, here I am.
You've arrived at your experimental planet.
I know. I was just watching it float there among the constellations. I don't know a more beautiful sight in the universe.
Well, break out the native costumes for us, too. We're going down.
At once?
I am a military man, Professor, not one of your psychologists. Now, so far, your people have spent 1,500 years studying that planet. But as for me, there's war on the Imperial borders, and I can spare 3 days.
3 days to decide.
To decide whether we can let your experiment go on or whether to discontinue it, shall I say?
But only 3 days. Marshal, you don't realize it would take a week just to explain the statistics of...
I know, I've heard it all. 1,500 years ago, the Psychological Research Foundation decided to learn what makes human history tick by running controlled experiments. So it took a lot of uninhabited planets and put different kinds of people on them.
Well, their memories wiped out, Marshal. The first generation started out knowing as little as animals. They had to discover everything for themselves. Fire, language, the wheel. Do you imagine that their descendants could have learned enough to menace us? To threaten an empire that for 3,000 years has controlled millions of planetary systems?
We've been through all this before, Haim. I've told you again and again, I'm not worried about your other experimental worlds. They're still cavemen or less. But this planet here, pure genius stock, a planet where nobody has an IQ below 150, and God knows how high they go. Well, I just can't tell about them. And His Majesty is worried, too. There have been rumors. He sent me here himself to decide whether or not those rumors could be true.
But the people down there don't even know the Galactic Empire exists. Why, the men there are still farming with plows and sailing in steamships.
Sure, what of it? Ordinary men on Earth with an average IQ of 100 needed maybe 500,000 years to get as far as your geniuses have in 1,500. I understand they've already developed Newtonian physics, chemical batteries, telescopes, world governments. At that rate, they'll be visiting the other planets of this system in 50 years. They'll reach the stars in a century, and then they'll be loose in the Galactic Empire. Do you think they'd fit tamely into the caste system, like good subjects of the Emperor? Why, they couldn't even if they tried. They'd produce a new invention and a new philosopher every day. And that would mean the end of stability, and that, Professor, would mean the end of the Empire.
So you say, but you're a soldier. You don't understand.
Yes, I know. I'm a dirty militarist who can't see past the end of my own guns. All I'm good for is killing, huh? And you're a noble intellectual scientist.
Yeah. I've heard that guff before, Professor, and I've gotten pretty tired of it.
But I tell you, the genius people are cooperative and...
My orders are to inspect the place and decide for myself whether they're right or not. So that's what I'm going to do. Come along, Heim.
Exploring Tomorrow continues in just a moment. When driving, luck can stay with you for years. But on the road, it can leave you in a split second, a tragic split second. So drive carefully. You will live longer, and you will arrive alive.
There's been considerable discussion of what constitutes good and evil over the last few millenniums. But, you know, there's an interesting comment someone made. I don't know where it did originate. Melodrama is the conflict between good and evil. And tragedy is the conflict between good and good. When two good men, each with a good point to make, get into conflict, that's where real tragedy starts.
All right, Professor. I've got the lifeboat into the atmosphere and leveled off. So where do I head now? Hi. Wake up, you wool-headed dreamer.
I'm sorry, Marshal. I was thinking, looking out the porthole and thinking.
What about?
How lovely the sky is. So blue. And the land below, mountains and forests and hopeful young farms.
Oh, no, a poet yet. Well, I'm thinking about my job of inspection. Where shall we go?
Fly north, northeast for 700 kilometers and you'll find this planet's largest city. It's also the capital of their world government.
That'll do. I should be able to observe a pretty good cross-section of the genius race.
Do you seriously believe you can decide the fate of an entire world on the basis of what you see in one city? How do you expect to learn anything even there? You don't speak any of the local languages, not even the international one that developed.
You'll talk for both of us. We'll claim to be visitors from a long ways off, the opposite hemisphere. We'll just wander around town for a couple of days, and I'll get the feel of the place.
You mean you decide whether these people live or die just on the basis of a hunch?
Now, here we are. Landed in an empty meadow. You sure nobody will happen by?
Well, what do they do? The lifeboat is invisible.
Even so. Well, we don't want the genius people learning the truth, do we, Professor?
Well, of course not. On that, you and I do agree. But my own motive is that I don't want to spoil the experiment.
Come on, let's get moving. We'll have to hike into the city. Oh, it's nice outdoors. Sunshine. I don't know when I last breathed air that didn't come out of a tank.
And you turn all this into black radioactive ash.
Come on, I said, let's start walking. Well, there's a road. It's pretty well paved.
Oh, yes. 10 years ago, this was a livestock trail. Today, they're driving steam automobiles over it. I predict that 10 years from now, the first airplane will use this for a landing strip.
Where's the mass market to support all that progress?
There isn't much of one. Actually, most people here are still riding around in buggies. You see, they have a unique social system. The average man on this planet would rather buy a new book than a new gadget. But at the same time, their engineers keep on making inventions because a mind of such power can't help being creative.
And I tell you, the Empire can't afford what you call creativeness.
Thank you.
this is their biggest city.
Right. There are about 1 million people in it.
You call that a city?
Considering the small population of this world, yes.
It's backward, all right. Carts pulled by animals. Water pumped by windmills, bearded men in clothes of vegetable fiber, wood and plaster houses, gas lamps.
That's what I keep telling you, Marshal. These people aren't demons. They're as human as you and I. They're born the same way as us. Grow up, learn, love, laugh, weep and die like human beings anywhere in all space and time. They simply happen to be more intelligent. Let them live.
70 generations ago, they were savages. They didn't even know how to chip a flint. And now they've come to this.
Yes. Our observers mingling with him in disguise have already learned more about historical dynamics than...
Well, sure, this city is still primitive. But in another 100 years, they have schools, laboratories. They don't frown on artists and scientists and philosophers. They glorify them. So in 100 years, they'll be out among the stars. And we don't dare allow that.
But they won't, Marshal. Not necessarily. If only you'd let me show you the economic data... For instance, the great uninhabited spaces they still have right on their home planet.
Shut up, I'm thinking.
Thinking? I don't think you're able to.
What did you say?
Nothing.
I have a knife, Grand Marshal Gorham. You don't know that, do you? You think I'm just another ineffectual little dreamer, don't you? Well, you may find out different.
If by militarist we mean someone who believes that it is necessary to use physical force to carry out, to implement a theory, a belief, then it looks to me like Professor Heim has become a militarist. He intends to use force, doesn't he?
Paral tu sola, perdan.
Saban hosted.
What did he say, that bellhop or whatever he was?
He wished us good night in the international language. He thinks we're foreigners, you remember?
If he only knew how foreign.
That's a cheap way to feel superior, isn't it?
Oh, shut up, Heim. I'm still trying to decide what to do about this planet. There are too many paradoxes. The waiter in the restaurant wanted to ask you about the ethnology of the country he thought we came from. This is a nice, clean hotel room, but it doesn't have running water. And yet the clerk downstairs was reading what I swear must have been a mathematical journal.
Does that make them monsters? Under the social system here, such routine jobs are done by students. And, of course, every person on this planet goes through at least 5 years of college. But that's all it amounts to, Gorham.
A whole world of long-haired dreamers who are experimenting with aircraft and rockets, who developed the theory of evolution before they learned how to smelt iron. I don't trust them.
Of course, you don't understand them. You're too... I mean...
Too stupid? Isn't that what you're going to say, Professor? I'm just a dumb militarist. Who worked his way from private soldier to Grand Marshal of the Galactic Empire. No fine scientist, just a hired hand keeping the barbarian raiders off your scientific back. Well, Professor Heim, I happen to be the man who will decide what's to become of this planet of geniuses.
And have you decided yet, Your Excellency?
Not yet. I can still take a couple of days to...
2 more days? After the foundation work of 1,500 years?
Hey, what are you doing?
This is a knife in my hand, Marshal Gorham. Don't move. If you reach for that blaster, I'll kill you.
You're going crazy, huh?
No. You're the crazy one. You're the lunatic who wouldn't blood out man's last best hope, this planet. You allow yourself 3 days to decide the whole future of a world. Now unbuckle that blaster. Don't let your hand come near the trigger, or I'll drop it on the floor. Kick it over to me. So. Now I've got you where I want you.
But, Professor, I haven't decided anything yet. I might decide this experiment is safe. I might still report to the Emperor. There's nothing to be afraid of. He can forget your race.
You might. But I know you won't. I'm going to kill you, Marshal Gorham. I'm going to report to the spaceship captain that you died accidentally. And then I'm going to hope that the next Imperial Inspector will be more reasonable.
Look out! Stand back, you fool! Don't!
I only stabbed you in the arm that time, Marshal Gorham. But you're in a corner now. I'll get you this time.
Clo, Varadan!
Go along, or I don't go along, you rat!
Who's done it, Schulte? Clo!
You spoke their language.
You already know the language of this planet.
Aye.
The attendant has the key, of course. He's coming in. Drop that knife, Professor Heim. He's a husky chap.
Shalom, Orna.
Aye. Take la odoret. Drop that knife, I said, Professor.
Yes, of course.
Sit down, Heim. You look more shocked than I am. Yavla noma, Tudan. He's gone after the first aid kit for me. Not that you hurt me seriously.
I'm sorry.
It doesn't matter.
And you're a native of this planet yourself.
Yes. I was born here, though I've lived most of my life out in the Empire.
We thought we were keeping a planet full of geniuses and ignorance. How long have you known?
We began to suspect the truth 500 years ago. We discovered that all life had evolved from lower forms, but couldn't find a subhuman ancestor for man. And finally, your disguised observers were identified. We even used blind man techniques to spot those wearing invisibility screens. Did you really expect you could go on fooling a race with twice your brain power?
Well, we thought so. Yes, I suppose it was foolish.
Some of us wormed our way into space as stowaways or in disguise, that sort of thing. People here live quietly so as not to give the show away. We don't tell our children the truth till they're old enough to keep up the pretense. But meanwhile, for the past 300 years, our agents have been out in the Empire learning everything you know, posing as citizens working up into the key positions of your government. We can do that by sheer merit.
Yes, obviously you can become Imperial Marshals.
Quite. And when the Emperor got suspicious, he sent me, his trusted soldier, a notorious anti-intellectual, to check up for him. Naturally, I was going to give this planet a clean bill of health, but I had to string you along first to make it look good. Evidently, I put on a better act than I had planned.
And now that I know your secret?
I'll have to report that you were accidentally killed here, Professor. But don't worry. All you have to do is spend the rest of your life here as one of us. I don't think you'll mind that.
Oh, no, not personally. I'd enjoy it. I used to envy the people on this world. But when you, well, your race, I mean, when you've completely taken over the Galactic Empire from within, what do you plan to do?
Well, we'll remodel it, shall I say. I'm afraid you wouldn't understand exactly what we intend to do. It's a little beyond your grasp, but it will be for the benefit of the ordinary galactic citizen, too. The poor, backward, benighted Galactic Empire.
They say that the first requirement for teaching a dog to do tricks is that you have to know more than the dog. If you want to teach a planet full of geniuses to do tricks for you, first make sure you know more than the geniuses. You can enslave some kinds of entities, but you can't enslave, you can't impose on entities who are more intelligent, more thoughtful, more wise than you yourself. What will happen is they'll turn out to be helping you in disguise.
Fascinating adventure in Exploring Tomorrow. Heard in our cast tonight were Ron Dawson and Al Ruscio. Script was by Powell Anderson, produced and directed by Sanford Marshall here in New York. Guy Wallace speaking.
Exploring Tomorrow, on Tuned to Yesterday from April 16th, 1958, the 18th program in that Mutual Broadcasting System series. That story by Paul Anderson, he was also heard on two other broadcasts of that series and on X-1, where his story The Light was featured in 1957 about the first men on the moon who discover footprints. It's an hour of sci-fi on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. And now it's Escape with the story Outer Limits, penned by Graham Doerr, and what would become one of the most adapted science fiction stories during radio's yesteryear, with Escape setting the bar on February 7th, 1950 on CBS. With Frank Lovejoy and William Conrad, it's a William N. Robeson production.
Tired of the everyday routine? Ever dream of a life of romantic adventure? Want to get away from it all?
We offer you Escape. Escape, designed to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure.
Tonight, we escape with the pilot of an experimental jet rocket aircraft about to be hurled 40 miles out from the Earth's surface into the limitless boundaries of space, where he receives the most terrible warning in the history of man, from which there is no escape. As Graham Doerr tells it in his thrilling and widely discussed story, The Outer Limit, starring Frank Lovejoy.
You went out of whatever warm bed you were in. Got a reason. The RJX-1. Yeah, that's right. The RJX-1. The top secret experimental rocket jet aircraft. We've been babying it, nursing it, staying up nights with it for 16 months now. This morning, Major Westfall is going to wean it. Bill is going to take her out and beat her up to death. I can't impress upon you men how extraordinary this flight is. It's an 8-rocket ship. That's what I said, 8 rockets. 8 rockets designed to take man into areas of space that have never been explored before. And at a rate of speed to which no pilot has yet been subjected. Some of you men have already flown many times the speed of sound, so I don't have to tell you very much. Yo?
Yes, Colonel?
You'll lead the F-86s. You and the other 3 jet boys will be Bill's chase planes. We want observation at 35,000 feet.
Yes, sir.
Okay, here's how it plays. Pull the curtains on the map, will you, Sergeant?
Yes, sir.
You see it circled here, your rendezvous point. We designate it Point X. It's roughly over Boulder Dam. 0 hour is 0900. Joe, you and your jets will take off at 0-15. You got that?
Yes, sir.
You F-86s will make conventional climbs to 30,000 feet. Rendezvous at Point X and call in to meet control at 35,000 feet. Right, Joe?
That cuts it, Colonel.
Oh, no, wait a minute. Not quite. Now we hear about the weather, Pete.
Yes, Colonel. Well, the weather's very pretty out, boys. All clear, ceiling unlimited. Winds aloft at 10,000, 80 mph, 25,000, 140 mph, 40,000, 150 mph. Estimated temperature, 45 below at 40,000 feet. There's some scattered clouds northwest of Point X at 15,000 feet. Stratus at 30,000 feet, 30 miles east of Point X, east. We expect no change for 3 hours. That's it, sir.
Okay, Pete. Joe, you and your boys go unwrap your F-86s. Have a nice time.
Yes, sir. Come on, boys.
Major Westfall. Major Westfall, stick around. I want to talk to you.
Okay, Hank.
How you feel, Bill?
Why? You worried, Hank? Don't worry.
Look, Bill, you've got only 10 minutes of rocket fuel. Get rid of those jets before you fire the rockets. Fire only one rocket
at a time.
Yeah, that's right. Now, look, I'll be listening in on the public address at control. I won't bother you until you're airborne. It'll be between you and the tower until then.
All right, don't worry, Hank. I'm going to fly that baby higher and faster than anybody ever did before, just like you said. I'm going to take it up and I'm going to bring it back. And then you and I'll have dinner together,
Good morning, Colonel.
Mr. Hargrove. He'll be here at the control with me?
It's all right with you, Colonel.
I wouldn't have it any other way.
You've checked the communications equipment, Sergeant?
Yes, sir. Major Westfall's been assigned a special radio frequency at 3970.
Good. You'll take care of it, Sergeant. We don't want it to poop out or anything like that, do we?
No, sir. Hargrove.
I got a thing on my mind. That boy in the plane you geniuses designed, he's my best boy.
It's our best plane, Colonel.
It better be. Now it's your turn. What do you got on your mind?
Everything's in proper order, Colonel. Recording equipment, the television cameras in the cockpit, everything. Every known scientific device, even some unknown. They've been very...
We're talking about a man, Hargrove. That's all I really want to get back out of this. What about the man?
There may be one difficulty.
Tell me about it. I'd like to know.
The takeoff, with all that load. The jets, the rockets, all at maximum fuel capacity. Never been tested that way before.
Go on, Mr. Hargrove.
Well, it's just that Major Westfall has only 6,000 feet to get his ship airborne. If he accelerates from 0 to 160 miles per hour in 6,000 feet, he should be airborne in 7 seconds.
7 seconds, that makes 0 plus G.
Yes, Colonel. Beyond 0 plus G? Well, beyond that, we don't know. We just don't know.
Thanks. Thanks for everything, Mr. Hargrove. Sergeant.
Yes, sir.
Flip your switch on Major Westfall. I hear he's got a swell program. Flip them all, will you, Sergeant?
Yes, sir.
RJX-1 to tower. Any change in weather?
Tower to RJX-1. Barometer rating 29.7. Set your altimeter accordingly.
Roger.
Wind 15 miles from south. Take off runway 27. Runway 27.
Got it.
0-130.
RJX-1 to control. Over.
Control to RJX-1. Go ahead.
This is just for you, Hank. Cabin pressure okay. Oxygen pressure okay.
All right. Get off the dime, kid.
I take a pill, Hank. You'll need it to settle your stomach.
0-1.
RJX-1 to crew chief. Over.
Crew chief to RJX-1. Go ahead.
I'm ready to fire.
Hold it. Okay. All set to fire.
Clear?
Clear.
Starting right, Jet. Starting left, Jet.
0-30
Tower
seconds.
To RJX-1. 0-30
seconds.
RJX-1 to tower. Go ahead.
Western Airlines convoy reported over Ventura.
Got it.
Eastbound Constellation at 17,000 over Salt Lake.
Roger.
Western Airlines DC-4 on Pace Lake at 1,000 over Burbank. The rest of the air is yours.
Thank you so much.
0-10
RJX-1 to tower. Ready for takeoff.
Tower to RJX-1.
Six,
clear for takeoff.
Five.
Good luck, Bill.
4-3-2-1-0
He's rolling.
Five.
Rolling.
B.
Bill, lift it.
G,
lift it.
A.
Lift it.
RJX-1 to control. Come in.
Control to RJX-1. Go ahead.
Everything's great, Hank. It's a doll, baby.
Hey, you must have been kidding with that takeoff, weren't you?
It took that long to get off. That makes it a takeoff.
How fast are you climbing, kid?
1,700 a minute airspeed, 550.
Retract your landing gear. It'll help.
Oops, sorry.
Call me at 20,000.
Everything is real good. Come in, Hank.
How do you feel?
I like it here.
Pressure okay?
Okay.
F-86 leader to control. F-86 to control. Come in.
Control to F-86 leader. Go ahead.
F-86 observing RJX-1. He's really tearing, Colonel. Over point X at 35,000.
On schedule, Joe?
On schedule.
RJX-1 to control, come in.
Control to RJX-1, go ahead, Bill.
40,000 feet, Hank.
Still a doubt, baby?
Still is. Ready to pressurize. Can you hear me okay, Hank?
Coming in fine.
Pressurized. Ready to prime rocket system in 5 seconds. Primed. Dropping right jet. Dropping left jet. All clear.
Good luck, Bill.
Firing number one rocket. Fired. Oh! Taken back. Firing number two rocket. Fired. Hey, honey!
Okay, Bill, what is it? Bill! Bill, are you receiving me? Control to RJX-1. Come in. Come in, RJX-1. Hello, Bill. Come in. Control to F-86 leader. Control to F-86 leader. Come in.
F-86 leader to control. Go ahead.
What about it, Joe?
F-86 observing RJX-1. RJX-1 at approximately 60,000 feet. Maintaining a heading of north-northwest. I can barely make him, Colonel.
Try calling.
Okay. F-86 leader to RJX-1. F-86 to RJX-1, come in. Come in, RJX-1, come in.
Mr. Hargrove.
F-86 to RJX-1.
Share it with me, Mr. Hargrove.
F-86 to
RJX-1. Sit here and run your fingers through your hair and...
Come in, RJX-1.
Wait and think about it and share it with me.
F-86 to RJX-1. F-86 leader to control. F-86 leader to control, come in.
Go ahead, F-86 leader.
We've lost him, Colonel.
Stay up there, Joe, for as long as you can.
What do we do now, Colonel?
I just told you, Mr. Hargrove. We wait. You and me, we wait.
We've lost him, Colonel.
You haven't lost me. I can hear you, Joe.
Stay up there, Joe, for as long as you can.
Hello? 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 I'll try another frequency, Joe. RJX-1 to F-86. Can you make me? RJX-1 to F-86. Come in. Come in. No good, huh? I'll switch back to Channel Charlie. Still can't get you, Joe. I'll keep sending. Firing number 8 rocket. Fired. Oh, brother! Oh, brother! RJX-1 to all you ships at sea, to all you people anywhere. This is Bill Westfall approaching 210,000 feet. That's 40 miles straight up in the air, all you people, and that's where I am. You never saw anything like it. No clouds. A color no one ever named before. And silence. 8 rockets roaring at my tail, and I can't hear them. Their sound will never reach me at 1,800 miles an hour. Silence so complete that the ticking of the clock on my instrument panel is a hammer in my brain. Silence. Otherwise, nothing. Nothing except... No, nothing at all. Wait a minute. Yes, there is something all right at 2 o'clock high. Oh, that's really something, brother. Maybe a flying disc, and this is a big one. Spinning like a top, and it's coming toward me. Can you hear me? Can you hear me? Listen. Something has just happened. Something, a missile, a shot, maybe, through the canopy. My pressure is going down. Something is happening to me. This thing, it's like a magnet. I'm being pulled toward it. I've lost control of my ship. I've no control. I'm going through decompression. I'm on the verge of unconsciousness. I'm blacking out. I'm flushed.
You are listening to The Outer Limits, starring Frank Lovejoy, in another thrilling adventure on Escape.
What about you, Mr. Hargrove?
To be frank with you, Colonel, in another 16 months, there'll be another plane. The RJX-2. And the Army will give us another man to fly it.
Not till we're certain about this man, and we're not certain.
What do you propose to do?
The things that are in the manual. We'll organize search parties and put spotter planes up in the air. Maybe Bill came down on the ocean. We'll call the Navy in.
Colonel, if the RJX-1 came down on the ocean, it would sink in 3 minutes. You know it had no life preserver equipment on it. The added weight of
we'll
the...
We'll call the Navy in.
Whatever you say, Colonel. My guess is...
What's your guess, Mr. Hargrove?
My guess is that sometime, somewhere, on some beach or in some field, someone will pick up a piece of torn metal. That someone will be holding what's left of the RJX-1.
There is no manifestation that we are in communication with him, sir. Hello
there,
Mr. Secretary. Yes, sir. I am Zeglon. You're aboard the space patrol ship S2J3. Am I in communication with you? Can you understand me? Are we in contact? Can you understand now what I am saying to you?
Yes, I can understand you.
Earthman, your brain is in turmoil, is it not? It has great difficulty in accepting what you see.
Yeah. Yes, that's right.
Accept it. What you see here exists.
All this? This exists?
It exists, Earthman. The spaceship you're on exists. Those jet dynamos you see before you exist. Jet dynamos driven by the harnessed power of 1,000 suns. Listen, Earthman. Listen to them. Do you know what happened as you listened, Earthman? We have flung ourselves 10,000 miles into space. What do you say to that, Earthman?
Why, I don't know what to say.
It's beyond the conception of your Earth brain. Then conceive this. Try to move, Earthman. You're not bound in any way. Try to move. Don't strain. It's impossible for you to move. There's a screen of force aimed at you. Now it's turned off. You may move about, Earthman. Proceed, Zeglon.
Yes, Commander. Earthman, I perceive that your intellect now accepts the fact. You are aboard Space Patrol Ship S2J3. I am Captain Zeglon of the Galactic Guard.
Galactic? Galactic Guard?
The Guardian of the Galaxy. The Guardian of the Universes. The instrument the Brotherhood of Worlds has set up in defense against such a civilization as yours. What puzzles you, Earthman?
Well, I can't see you. I can feel that you're here, but I can't see you.
There is no necessity for you to see us. It is sufficient that we communicate with each other.
Yes, but talking to you is... Well, it's not like talking. It's as if it were all happening inside my brain.
It is. That is how I'm reaching you. By telepathy. Do you remember what happened to you before you blacked out?
Yes, I think so. There was a sharp sound, like a bullet hitting the canopy.
It was not a bullet. It was a ray. It was necessary to stop your flight. We have so much to tell you.
Well, first tell me about my ship. Is it lost?
No. It is such a crude little ship.
Crude?
Easy for us to repair. It will be returned to you. And you will return to Earth. Because you are the Earth's only hope of survival.
Hope of survival? What do you mean?
I will show you. What you see on this screen before you is a panorama of your own universe. Far greater in scope than an Earthman has ever seen before. Observe. Observe where the line is pointing. Planet 3, Star 5, Galaxy C, Sector K.
Is that the Earth?
No. That dot, that speck you see revolving in the vastness, is your sun. A star whose surface is 12,000 times that of your Earth. Your Earth is not even visible here.
What? How did you know we even existed?
That was our problem. We first became aware of your planet when we found atomic dust in the upper atmosphere. We traced it to your Earth.
It was that important to you?
Quite. We determined that you were setting off atomic bombs. That's why the Galactic Council has quarantined you.
Quarantined? I don't understand. How? How are we quarantined?
We have sealed off your planet from the rest of space.
But
we have surrounded it with a force screen. When that screen has accumulated enough particles of atomic dust, your Earth will explode. Your civilization, you, all life will disappear forever.
Listen to me, Earthman. Listen. We've had our own wars. Wars that almost destroyed our civilization. But we have finally outlawed war throughout space, including Earth. Now listen carefully, Earthman. If you continue to make atom bombs and hydrogen bombs, each many times more powerful than the last, and if you start making war with them, exploding them, it would upset the balance of the entire universe, throw all space into chaos. This, of course, we cannot allow. And the force screen with which we have surrounded the Earth will prevent it by exploding the Earth itself. Remember then, Earthman, if you start an atomic war, the Earth will at once be completely destroyed. Warn them, Earthman.
Release him, Zeglon.
Yes, Commander. Earthman, you will rise from your seat and open that door. Descend those stairs, Earthman. You will now enter the chamber to your left. There's your ship. Get into it, Earthman. Are you ready?
Yes, I'm ready.
While we were communicating, the patrol ship has returned to where we picked you up. And now you will be propelled toward Earth. Close your canopy. Open aperture.
Warn them, Earthman. Warn them.
Fire!
RJX-1 to tower. RJX-1 to tower. Come in. RJX-1 to tower. Come in, tower.
Tower to funny man. You loaded, kid? How did you get in on this frequency?
Listen, this is RJX-1. RJX-1 coming in for landing. Give me landing instructions.
Tower to funny man. Impossible that you're RJX-1. He's 10 hours overdue. Get away from the area. Area cleared for bomber practice approaches.
This is Major Westfall and RJX-1. Come on, kid, give me landing instructions. I have no fuel. I'm gliding.
What? Hey, yeah, I see you now, Major. Wait a minute. I'll restrict the area. Okay, RJX-1. Go ahead.
Approximately 6 miles north of field. Clear area for 10 miles.
Being cleared. What's your altitude?
10,000. Estimate 6 minutes to land.
Tower to RJX-1. You are clear to land. Runway 9. Wind east, southeast 15.
Roger. Coming down. Hank, you won't believe it, but you've got to. I know you won't believe it. It'll knock you over.
Oh, yeah, just take it easy, Bill.
Sergeant.
Yes, sir.
Have the ship gone over by Geiger counters for radioactivity and seal it.
What?
Oh, yes, Hank. You better mount a 24-hour guard on it.
Look, what did you run into?
Plenty. Listen to me, Hank. They said the Earth would explode. They said it was the end for us.
They said that? Come on, let's go over to my office.
You gotta believe me.
Read it like an order, Bill. My office. I want Major Donaldson to look at you.
The psychiatrist?
think you've got to listen
Come
to me.
Over to the office.
Well, that's the story, Major Donaldson.
I see.
Well, Hank, you believe it, don't you?
Well, Major, what do you think?
I'm not sure. Bill, these men from Mars...
I didn't say they were from Mars. Did you hear me say anything about men from Mars?
No, you didn't.
All I'm trying to tell you is this. Whoever those people were, they knew all about us, everything. And they warned me. Our atomic bombs are a danger to the universe. One more and we're going to be the juiciest galactic 4th of July of all time. Explode, finish, gone. Like that. How do you like it?
All right, Bill, roll up your sleeve.
Oh, now, forget it, Major. All I need is a couple of drinks.
Sorry, Bill, sorry. Not right now. Let the Major give you a hypo.
Now, look, I got a drink coming, a lot of drinks.
Later.
Come on, Bill, the sleeve.
You heard him, Bill.
All right, yes, all right, if it's an order. Go ahead.
There. You'll be okay in a few hours.
I'm okay now.
Sure. We'll leave you here, Bill. It's all right if Bill sleeps in here, isn't it, Colonel?
Sure.
Yeah. Well, maybe you'll believe me tomorrow. You'd better.
Come on, Major. He'll be okay by himself, Major?
He's been under a strain, but he'll sleep a long time. You better explain it to his wife somehow. I'll talk to him tomorrow. Tough. I've heard he's one of the best.
He's the best. A combination of nerve and loyalty and lightning reflexes that comes once in 10 million times. What about it, Major? How does Bill look to you?
I can't tell yet. Maybe a week, 6 months, 6 years. I'll need a whole lot of time with him before I can tell.
I see. Well, he'd better get some sleep, too.
All right. And don't worry, Colonel. He's a strong boy. Best nerves I've seen. I'd say things will be all right. Delusions like Bill's latched on to... Well, delusions like this...
Major.
Yes, Colonel?
Major, when you make your charts for Bill, diagnose him and treat him and do all the things you have to, when you do that, Major, consider this.
Yes?
How did he keep that plane in the air for 10 hours? For 10 hours, Major, when he had fuel to last him only 10 minutes.
Escape is produced and directed by William N. Robeson, and tonight starred Frank Lovejoy in The Outer Limit by Graham Doerr. Adapted for radio by Morton Fine and David Friedkin. Featured in the cast were Charles McGraw as the Colonel, Jeff Corey as Major Donaldson, Stan Waxman as Zeglon, and Ian Wolfe as Zill. Special music was arranged and conducted by Del Castillo. Actual flight details were authenticated by rocket test pilot Gene May, Sergeant Hartley Caldwell of the Air Force Section of the Armed Forces Public Information Office, and by the Douglas Aircraft Corporation. Next week...
You were on the Baltic Sea within sight of the Soviet coast, where your Russian wife is secretly waiting to escape with you to England. And on the cold, dark waters behind you, an armed patrol boat is about to discover your small sailing craft. If it does, you will never escape.
Next week, we escape with Roger Bax's thrilling and timely tale of a man and woman who dared to defy an entire government in order to be together, two if by sea. Goodbye, then, until this same time next week, when once again we offer you Escape. Two all-star bouts are promised on CBS this Wednesday night. Bing Crosby faces Fred Allen across the CBS mic to battle it out on who's funnier, singers or comedians. And in the second attraction, Gracie Allen and a smashed fender team up against not-so-gorgeous George Burns and a guilty conscience. This Wednesday also brings you Groucho Marx, his ad-libs on You Bet Your Life, and a Dr. Christian story about two redheads in love. Fun action variety, they're all yours with Dr. Christian, Groucho Marx, Bing Crosby and Fred Allen, and George and Gracie on most of these same CBS stations Wednesday night. Now stay tuned for the adventures of Philip Marlowe,
which follows immediately on most of these same CBS network stations. This is CBS, where you bet your life with Groucho Marx every Wednesday, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
10 p.m. BULOVA, Bulova watch time. Today, trade in your old watch for a handsome new Bulova.
Give them soup, good hot soup. With the weather so cold, give them soup.
These cold days, nothing hits the spot like Campbell's Chicken Gumbo Soup, piping hot. Get plenty of Campbell's Chicken Gumbo Soup.
Cold winter days, give them soup.
WCBS AM and FM, New York.
Escape on Tuned to Yesterday from February 7th, 1950 on CBS, Graham Doerr's Outer Limits. It would be adapted again on NBC's two sci-fi shows, Dimension X and X-1, also on Suspense in 1954. And that closes this hour of science fiction on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's yesteryear. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levanier. Thanks for tuning in.